Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's April 1st, 2014, April Fool's Day. We got Two Roads Brewing and Brasserie Trois Dames. I'm calling this for the Love of Saison show. What a great crowd we have here. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. Thanks to Roberta's, and most of all, thanks to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can be a member and check it out, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We got Paul Sullivan. He's now working with Two Roads Brewing. He's also a columnist in Ale Street News. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks, Jimmy. Nice to be here.
So, Paul, I think you might have an interesting perspective on this crowd. We got Raphael from Trois Dames in Switzerland, B.R. Roya from Shelton Brothers. John Kleinchester is also part of the Two Roads team, and our esteemed American brewer, Phil Markowski, who's an author of a great book about farmhouse ales. What do you think about Phil and Two Roads? Because you've been an Ale Street News columnist for a long time, a home brewer. You write a great homebrew column. You also lead the tasting panel. You know, what is it about Two Roads that inspired you, and how long have you known Phil? Give us a little background.
Yeah, that's part. I've known Phil over 20 years now, I guess. I met him when I volunteered at the old New England Brewery when they were in Norwalk, Connecticut. I was one of the homebrew volunteers that would come help on the bottling line. And we kind of became friends. I gave him some of my homebrew. He gave me some good feedback. And he's been a real influence on my brewing for a long time. And I'm very happy to be working with him in his brewery now.
All right. And what do you think the role, I'm trying to build everyone up to Phil, but if you've read his book, what's the role of Phil's book? It's the Farmhouse Ales, Culture and Craftsmanship in the Belgian Tradition. I mean, is that something that has inspired brewers as well as home brewers, Paul?
Yeah. I mean, back before he wrote that book, it was very mysterious how to brew saisons and farmhouse ales, and Phil kind of really took apart the process and talked about different yeasts and different ingredients and all sorts of things that kind of made it more accessible to the average brewer.
All right. And Raphael from Trois Dames in Switzerland, welcome back to New York. We met you last year when you visited.
Hello, yes.
Yeah, and now you're brought over by Shelton Brothers, and BR's here. Tell us a little bit how you got started. I know you had a love of Saison also when you were first starting out.
Yes, so I've been brewing English, North American inspired beers, and also of course Belgium. And I've done some traditional saison, but I tried to find a way of brewing beers which is not exactly the same that the Belgians do. And and I try also to use sometimes, yeast from the fruits, and combine the yeast from the fruits with the yeast from traditional beer yeast. And experiment with this.
Oh, cool. And BR, thanks for coming on the show again. It's always great having you, BR Boyer from Shelton Brothers.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Tell us a little bit more about Raphael, because you brought him to the States last year.
Yeah, he's been here a few times, and a lot of the beers that we do not import are ones that are not found traditionally in Switzerland, but that Raphael keeps in Switzerland, like IPAs and stouts that, we have lots of good ones in the U.S., and we find that the beers that he's doing more experimentation on are the ones that are really doing well for us. As he was saying, experimenting with wild yeast cultures on the fruit skins. We have one beer here, La Mareuse, which it's a saison, which is then one is fermented with white wine, grape lees, and the other with red wine, Chasselas, and then the Pinot Noir. Or a Gamay, I believe. So those we find are really finding an audience here in the U.S., especially with people really getting interested in sour beers, into wild fermented beers, and those are taking off for us. So we're happy to have
it. We're looking forward to the show. You got a lot to talk about. And, of course, Phil Markowski, the brewer for Two Roads. Phil, it's so nice to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jim.
And, we've got to see you a few times over. First, just for our listeners, Phil's not wearing a hat. And if you know Phil Markowski, I've only seen you with a hat on, ever. Is that typical, guys?
I'd say more often than not, but yeah, especially this time of year. You know, got nothing upstairs, so I got to stay warm somehow.
No, we love having you here, and this Two Roads project has been like, it's crazy. I mean, you're also making beer for other guys like Evil Twin that we've had on the shows. But ultimately, what's your main goal? Is you're trying to make Two Roads brand?
Absolutely. I mean, our attention first and foremost is on Two Roads brand. That's our focus. We built a very large brewery in order to do it once and not have to do it over as we grow. And you know, in order to facilitate that. At the same time, we recognized there was a need for a facility to make, faithful renditions of craft beers. A lot of the regional contract breweries in the area are not really set up for it, and we built something from the ground up to be set up specifically to do craft beer. But absolutely, our focus is Two Roads. We just launched here in New York about a month ago. It's been going great. Currently, we're available statewide in Connecticut and Rhode Island and in Greater New York City, Westchester in New York. We'll be expanding into Massachusetts in April. So this is April now. So a couple weeks from now, we'll be launching in Massachusetts. And that's it, in our immediate plan. So we really want to be a regional craft brewer and, with obvious focus on Connecticut. That's our home state. And, we want to do it with an array of both traditional and unique beers.
Great. So I knew you first when you were at Southampton Public House. And tell us how you got started there.
Well, can I go all the way back?
Sure, go back.
I got into beer in college, which, that's unique story, is it? And
Paul, did you get into beer in college?
No, high school.
He's very precocious. I worked with this gentleman who is English, who happened to mention one day that he brewed beer at home. And I was completely astounded and had to find out more about it. So that weekend, I bought my first home brew kit. I'm dating myself, but this was 1984. And I started... just immersed myself in it, just fascinated by the process. And 5 years later, I was offered a position to be a professional brewer. And this was 1989, so there were not many craft breweries around. And that was New England Brewing Company. So I was there from 1989 to 1995. Went up to New Hampshire, started a brewery up there in Merrimack. It was a mile from the Anheuser-Busch plant. And then in 1996, came down to Southampton, New York, and was there for 16 years. And then the last 2.5 years were dedicated to Two Roads. And we opened Two Roads we started selling the beer in December of 2012. And, here we are 15 months later, and it's going really well. And we're about to have our first sour beer release on April 19th. So we're really trying to do a lot of interesting beers, but we have what we feel is a very solid core of 5 beers. And we have, are we ready to get into the tasting? Or
go for it.
We have our olfactory pills, which we've just opened up. And, this is in many ways a very traditional German-style Pilsner, but we have... philosophy at Two Roads, we would like to put our own stamp on everything.
Cheers, Phil.
Do. And the twist that we put on the olfactory pills is we dry hop it, which is not something commonly done, certainly not in Germany. So that's, it's otherwise very, respectful rendition of German pills. And this is one of our flagship products that we do year-round, and in some markets, it is our best seller.
Well, Paul, what do you think of this Pilsner?
It's really good. It's a nice, dry German Pils.
And you've done a lot of tastings with Ale Street News. I know you do the kind of blind tastings.
Yes.
And what would you pit this against at other Pils that are on the market that you like?
Oh, classic German Pils, probably Jaeger. And all the other really good world-class ones.
Phil, so for Two Roads, you pretty much are creating all new recipes. And tell us the process of creating the beers that you're making at Two Roads.
Well, you know, again, every beer that we make, that we decided to make, is made by, it's a committee decision. So we, you know, we've chosen our core products to reflect what we feel is, you know, something that might be missing or lacking in the craft market. So we decided on doing a Saison year-round and in 12-ounce bottles and a six-pack and on draft, which is unusual. And, excuse me, you know, I've been somewhat typecast as the farmhouse sales guy, and I'm not complaining about it, but, you know, people identify me with farmhouse sales, for better or worse. And, you know, to me, I have a deep love for this style of beer, no question about it. And we wanted to do something that was a little more faithful to the original, and that, you know, means lower in alcohol, yet still not lacking in flavor and complexity. So with our workers' comp saison, which I think maybe is on deck here for our next sample, we chose to build complexity in several layers. And, you know, a lot of times my own process, you asked me about my process in crafting recipes, is to imagine a flavor profile, then, you know, work backwards from there. Just try to figure out how to get the type of flavor complexity, both nuanced and not, into the beer. And in this case, we have a wide range of grains that we put in our saison. And this, I would have to believe, is traditional in the sense that back in the day on a farmhouse brewery, you'd had to believe that they were brewing with different ingredients. They were resourceful. They probably were brewing with what they had on hand at any given time. So, and I, you know, unlike today's emphasis on consistency every batch, I'm not sure that mindset existed back then. And so brewers brewed with what they had, and that most likely meant a wide variety of different grains. So to kind of honor that heritage, we chose to use both malted and unmalted barley, malted unmalted wheat, malted and unmalted rye, spelt, and oats. So pretty much the gamut of grains that are used in brewing beer. But, you know, arrange them such that they form a subtle complexity. And then we have the special yeast strain that we use that generates a lot of the peppery, clove, spicy characters, tropical fruit characteristics. All of that we
the fruit really
build in with out. the yeast strain that we use. So it's not meant to be a it's really meant to be a good, solid, everyday drinking beer, not a special occasion beer. It's just, you know, simple, and I think true to its simple rustic roots. And lower in alcohol, so it's sessionable.
Pierre, what do you think of the Saison from Two Roads?
I really like it. I find it's got like some nice peachy apricot notes that come out of the fruitiness. And, you know, you can tell that there's definitely that mix of grains, the little spiciness from the rye coming through. And I'm a fan of the lower ABV Saisons, like they inspired by Yvonne de Batz, who wrote the chapter on Saisons in the farmhouse book. Yeah, it seems like they would have been something much lower in alcohol, because if you're going to be out working in the fields at lunchtime, you're not going to drink a 7% Saison. Well, you could and then fall asleep. But
so how do we like farmhouse ales, Saisons, beer de garde? How do they differ? Let's say, well, I'm coming back to farmhouse ales.
Of course. Well, you know, something about Saison, which I tried to emphasize in the book, and it's, you know, when you think of the various renditions, there's quite a lot of variation in the commercial versions. There's really, it's kind of like an open book in a way, but there are some characteristics that are across the board true. And with Saison, they tend to be most of the time extraordinarily dry. So they're refreshing beers. They have a lot of complexity in the fruit characteristics. So they tend to emphasize fruity characters. Dryness, you know, by and large, they're refreshing. So that kind of goes back to the roots of it being a refreshing beer for a farm worker that it was lower in alcohol, it was dry on the palate, and therefore was refreshing. So that was kind of the direction that Saisons went into. Beer de garde, which means beer for keeping, I think in more modern times morphed into a higher alcohol, full-bodied, malt-accented beer, which, you know, can play to the other main reason that farm workers were given these ales back in the day when, frankly, it wasn't safe to drink the water. They had higher sugar content, so they tended to provide energy and, you know, again, in practical terms, these beers were meant for farm workers way back in the day. And now, you know, we'd like to think that things may not change over hundreds of years, but I know they have. You know, the brewing methods have found their way into modern versions of these beers. You know, it's inevitable that they've changed. And Beer de Garde has become associated with Northern France, Saison with Belgium. So the two styles have common roots, but in modern times they've evolved into two different, distinctly different things.
All right. Hey, Raphael from Trois Doms, what do you think of this Saison?
I like it because it has as much of this East character, which is very dominant. And when you think about that, you think about, you know, the spiciness and also it's more hoppy personally, I have more understanding of the Saison beer than the, for example, the Pilsner than before because I drink it less often. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break. We're going to play some music and be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
So you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
That's your job. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here with Phil Markowski and the team from Two Roads and Raphael from Trois Doms in Switzerland. But we're breaking in a new beer rep, John Kleinchester, who we all know as at Beertography. He did a great job. He's been promoting beer and hosting this great site on Twitter for a long time. He's finally got a job. And you wanted for a long time, John, right? You applied for a couple
secret?
Of reps. No, but you really wanted a job in beer, and I'm really proud of you.
Thank you very much.
But you're on the show today, and your job is to pour beer, and, you know,
I failed so far. I'm sorry.
Come on.
I'll get there, I swear.
So the serious question for Phil and Raphael, first question is, I'm noticing now that a lot of American breweries are releasing spring saisons, and they're great. Victory, Six Point, Greenport Harbor that we know in New York. When did people start associating saisons with spring, or do they not?
Good question, Jim. I don't know, but I think it certainly makes sense in the sense that the beers are very refreshing. They are traditionally thought of as summer beers or warm weather beers, and the profile supports that. So it's not unexpected that brewers might release a spring saison. or a summer saison for that matter.
Yeah, I think they're doing it as like a seasonal. I just wanted to start off the segment with that and poke fun at John Clanchester, who's with us. But also, Raphael, what beer are we tasting next? Are we going to taste some Trois Dames? Let's taste some things that you brought, BR, because we've tasted some of the Two Roads, and I really like what Phil's doing with the Pilsner and the Saison. And we'll come back and taste some of your sour beers as well. But Trois Dames, you're really doing something totally different. Like you're working with fruit yeast, wow. And you put in grapes in some of your beers too, aren't you?
Yeah. So I have. You know, the thing is, in Switzerland, we have when we have to buy malt. It comes from Germany or from France or from Belgium. We don't have our own malt factories, and the hop often comes from other countries. So. We are in a wine country, also in the French-speaking part is a wine country. And I figured out that, a nice thing to do with using fruits and raisin and apricots is also the use of more, local ingredient. And that was one of the reasons also I started to do blends of different type of beer with fruits.
Well, it's nice. BR, tell us a little more about this beer. I mean, I think Raphael just came from the airport, and did this beer come with him right off the plane?
No, not this one.
No, the beer came with me on the subway, running through multiple subway, which it could explain in part its liveliness. But this one, like I said, you know, we're finding that with Americans' taste going towards sours, that these barrel-aged beers, the beers done with fruit, are definitely gaining more traction. I mean, we do have our traditional sour brewers like Cantillon and Tréfontaine, and but we also have, you know, many of our brewers are experimenting more with wild yeast and barrel aging, and really doing some interesting stuff, and they're able to expand more. You know, the more we sell here, the more they're able to expand on their end. And you know, with Raphael's beer, we enjoy the fact that he is using so much of the local fruits there. He has an oud brun with apricots. We've just brought into New York a Saison that's been aged on Morello cherries and then combined with an Imperial Stout and aged in Kirsch barrels, the Forêt Noire, the Black Forest. So, you know, definitely some intriguing things that we're pretty excited about.
Raphael, are you doing all that stuff at your brewery in Switzerland?
Yeah, so now what we have done, we have one building with the principal brewery where we do the beers we sell on a regular basis, like a blonde ale, a red ale, and a wheat. And then we have another building where we have all the assemblage. We are doing more and more beers, which is not just one entity. It's an assemblage of two or three different entities. It can be maybe a barrel aged part of the portion of that beer, and then a fruit part, and then a fresh beer blend together, and then aged together in or in stainless steel or in wood barrels, and then put in the bright tank again for the bottling or the kegging. And so we actually would be producing in one building, and then send the beer by hose to the other building.
Phil, what do you think about his saison?
This is really nice. Get a nice grape sweetness to it. Grape, it's very dry. It's very refreshing. It finishes nicely with a nice sweetness. Is it a combination of red and white grapes?
This one is with some raspberries.
Oh, interesting.
But only a little bit.
No, it's really nice, and again, it fits the saison. This, you know, the number one attribute is dry and refreshing, and this is it.
Well, it's amazing, and it's so. You all must. I mean, especially BR with the different beers you guys bring with Shelton Brothers. That. It's like every region has traditional ingredients, and I like seeing that expression in beers. What do you guys think? Paul, what about you?
Yeah, definitely. Very nice.
Yeah. I mean, anyways. But Phil, you also brought some sour beers too, which is this is really the big story. It's Two Roads. I mean, Raphael's great. Trois Dames is, you know, he's been over here the second time in the last year. Really great to have you come out, and I know BR next week you're going to feature a couple of Trois Dames at Jimmy's Number 43. Which ones are you going to have for us? There's a couple beers you're bringing in.
I know for sure we've got the Oud Brun, the Grand Dame Oud Brun, which is the Oud Brun with apricots, and I'd have to check for the others.
Did you bring that today?
I didn't.
That's the one I want to try. Come on. And then Phil's here. So you guys, the real story I want to get to with you guys is, I mean, so you were at Southampton. It was a brew pub.
Mm-hmm.
And then did you grow it through contracting? Was that part of your job?
Yes. And you know, that experience taught me the need for something, for a facility like Two Roads, where somebody could go and reproduce their craft-style beers, which are typically dry-hopped. I mentioned earlier, the larger regional breweries weren't really set up for that, so it was kind of frustrating to try to replicate our beers faithfully. So, you know, that was part of the genesis of Two Roads, was to be able to create a facility that craft brewers could come to and, you know, brew their beers authentically. And since we started, since we did our first brews back in November of 2012, we started a sour program, and knowing that it would take a year plus for some of these beers to be ready, we planned our first sour release, and it's a brewery-only release, on April 19th. And the three products that we're releasing, you're tasting one right now. This is Crazy Pucker, which is our Berliner Weiss. Really freakish-looking label, if I do say so myself.
Yeah. With, who designed the label?
I'm not telling, but it wasn't me. But.
Yes, pass that to Maggie. Maggie, we'll take a picture and put it on Twitter, and if you tweet back, you'll get a free. Do you have Two Roads T-shirts, John?
He's wearing the only one he owns.
If you like the Crazy Pucker label and you tweet us back, you get a free Two Roads T-shirt.
How about that? Right. And it's a sneak preview, because this has not been released, and as I mentioned, it's a brewery only release, so it's.
So it's the first time anyone's
bottles,
seen that label, right?
Outside the brewery, yes. So,
well, it's cool. I mean, so a lot of breweries seem to start with the Berliner Weiss as like a first sour, right? Is that an easier style to make?
I wouldn't say easier necessarily. It's perhaps a little more predictable. There's cultures available now, but when I first started making them, you were on your own. I mean, you had to figure it out on your own. But now, it's still not easy and still not entirely predictable, but you can buy cultures all set to go, and you know, they make good Berliner Weiss. You know, I think sometimes people may not give them enough time. You know, you really do have to let the bacteria run its course and not rush it, set up the right conditions and you know, let it go, and it's not ready until it's ready.
Yeah. And you, people think of you as like a real brewer's brewer. I mean, you're respected, you're an author, but really, your heart and soul is you're running a brewery every
yep.
day, and that's why we're so lucky to have you on the show, and really appreciate you could take the time
well,
to come into the
my
city.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Paul, do you do anything in the brewery besides? I mean, you're doing some repping and you're a writer, but are you also trying to get your hands in the brewery action?
Well, Phil's a great brewer. I'll let him take care of that part of it.
Well, what still, Paul's not telling you is he taught me a thing or two over the years, too. So he's a fantastic lager brewer. So
well, yeah, it must be fun. I mean, I've known you for 20 years, almost to the day, and you're always a home brewer at heart. So
yep, used to bring my home brew into Muggsy's Chow Chow back in the day.
A long time ago. So what do you think about this Berliner Weiss recipe?
Really nice.
I want you to ask some questions, like, you know, about recipes.
What's the gravity, Phil?
This is 8.5 Play-Doh, so it's low alcohol beer. It's less than 3%, we estimate. Okay. So it's very low in alcohol. You know, the predominant characteristic, of course, very light in body and has a tartness that's certainly noticeable, but not overwhelming. And it's, you know, it's really very much a traditional Berliner Weiss down to the alcohol content. These were beers that were meant to refresh, and they do just that. I mean, they're really kind of, I like them year-round, but it's really, you know, a warm-weather beer at heart.
And for the brewing process, did you boil this, or did you do the traditional sour mash? Or?
This was not done with a sour mash at all. This is strictly bacterial fermentation. to get the sourness.
And is it boiled or not boiled?
Yeah, we did boil it. Yes.
How long did it take to? How old is it now when we're tasting it?
We started this in May. May, early June last year. So it's not quite a year, but you know, we have some other beers that are actually we started 15 months ago that aren't ready yet. You know, that will be in a future sour release at the brewery. Some of which will be in November this year. We're going to do another sour release. So yeah, they take varying amounts of time, but as I said before, these are not products that are made by the calendar. You know, they dictate when they're ready. So.
And how did you
it's
notice?
Very nice. I like it.
You like it, Raphael? Yeah. I do too.
Thank you.
How did you notice the flavor evolving? I'm sure you tasted it along the way.
I did taste it at least weekly. A lot of times with these beers, changes don't occur very rapidly, so you can taste them a couple times a month and maybe see some progress. But there are always times with a sour beer's development where they don't taste very good. There's a sort of an awkward age that they go through, and then as long as you ride it out and again set up the right conditions, they kind of hit the mark. You know, at some point, months down the road, typically. Again, you can't rush these things, and at our brewery, we do very small amounts because we have them sequestered in a far end of the brewery. I mean, we have a big production facility, and we produce, for the most part, very clean beers, and this is the last thing we want mixed in with our equipment. So we have a – we're actually
– I was going to ask you that.
It's a common question that we're asked, and people wonder why we can't make more. It's because we have very small tanks. In a far end of the building, we hand bottle these, so we don't want this type of beer on our regular equipment. So it's important to keep things separate, but it doesn't mean you can't do, you know, a wide ranging diversity of beers, and that's what we aim to do.
I mean, to what extent do you have what do you do to separate the sour beer portion from the rest of the brewery?
Well, they use
they're not separate buildings, are they?
They're not currently, but we're actually. We're outfitting. We have a 100-year-old factory building that we bought in Stratford, Connecticut, and we renovated most of it, but we have some outbuildings that we are currently renovating to house our sour beer program. So it'll be physically removed from the rest of the brewery by, you know, a couple hundred yards, but not, you know, it's not in the same building. And then we use all different equipment, different hoses, different pumps. We fill the bottles by hand. It doesn't go on our regular equipment. So we try to keep everything isolated from the main plant.
All right. And Raphael, I'm trying to get the two brewers to talk a little bit and hang out because they're so different, but all brewers are the same. You guys, like, seem to care about the same process. You're interested in, you know,
different ingredients. Yeah, I think we like to experiment and to let also the nature do things, you know. Sometimes people are amazed about the result of a beer. I said, yes, I have done part of the job, but the other part is the nature has helped me also. yes.
All right. Do you ever think you two of you guys would ever make beer together? Is that, you know, now you're doing, tell us about, I want to hear about the, do you call it contract component? What's the, with guys like Evil Twin coming to you? Are you making beers with them, or are you making beers for them?
I mean, I guess you could say it's both. I mean, we have 12 customers that we make beer for, and they're all involved to varying degrees. You know, Yeped Evil Twin is very much involved. Brian Strumke at Stillwater is very involved in making sure we brew his beers the way he wants them to, And it's not our, you know, we're not there to preach to anybody that this is the way you should do it. I mean, brewing is, that's kind of the beauties of brewing. There's a million different ways to achieve the end result, and you know, it's an art form. So you can't say that one particular approach is better than another. And so we just, you know, we're there to do what people want us to do. And
Yes, so sometimes people ask me, so what do you think about your job? And I say, you know, I sometimes feel more closer to a chef of the cuisine, like someone who is doing kitchen recipes, because I don't want to make just one beer. I'm interested in different style, different approaches, and I feel more close to a chef than maybe a technical brewer of a larger brewery. And the reason I'm here in America this time is because we are having this project together with two other American breweries. We are brewing a beer together with Jester King Brewing Company in Texas and Crooked Stave in Denver, Colorado. So what we do, we are going to be brewing the same recipe in three different locations using the same kind of raw ingredients, and then barrel aged, and we have picked up barrels from the region of south of Spain, from Jerez de la Frontera, cherry barrels, and so the same barrels will be used also in the three different projects. And what will be different from one product to the other is the local water we are using, and also the microorganism and the type of yeast we're going to be using to ferment and to put in the barrels.
And are all three of you guys making beer at the same at each location, traveling?
So we have done the first product. We have done it back in October in Texas. And now Denver, Colorado, it will be the 12th of October. And then the brewers from these two breweries come to Switzerland the 5th of May for the SERP project. And afterwards, maybe in 6 months or 1 year from now, it would be possible to try the three different beers at the Shelton Festival or in some occasion.
Wow. That's cool. I'm pretty psyched today. We got two different brewers here. We got Phil Markowski, our great American brewer from Two Roads, and Raphael from Trois Dames in Switzerland. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick. I can't wait to have some pizza. We used to have, I'm going to make a short announcement. Looking back to my old co-host, Ray Dieter, who passed away a few years ago, we used to always have the steak for two, and that was how Ray would celebrate life. And I got to know his partner, Dennis Zentek, after he died. And sadly, Dennis Zentek died last week, the other founding member of the DBA Bar's. He fell and had a head trauma, and sadly, there's going to be a gathering April 16th at DBA in East Village in the afternoon. I would say go to the DBA East Village Facebook to learn more about it, but some of their partners from New Orleans are coming up. They're going to do a second line. There'll be food and things, but Dennis and Ray were such an important, you know, founders of the craft beer community in New York, and it was sad that we learned about it last week, and they're just making plans for the memorial service. So let's make a toast to Dennis Zentek of DBA and Ray, and you know, those guys were important guys. But we've also got some. It's great having Phil Markowski. I'm trying to tie it into. There's been sadness and all that stuff, but you know, Phil, you really are also one of these pioneers for craft beer scene, and it's nice to have you on.
Thanks, Jim. Goes to show you hang around long enough, and good things happen.
Well. So you're getting into sours, you're playing around with that. So what's the second sour that we're tasting? I really like its style.
Actually, this is Raphael's here, right?
Or
Urban Funk we tried before. I actually have another bottle here. This was something we did with, we captured a yeast. This is sort of what Raphael was talking about earlier, that's something he's doing with local yeasts. We captured an airborne yeast. It was actually during Hurricane Sandy. So possibly this yeast came from a far-off place, and, you know, we captured it locally. And at first, did not think that it was going to have legs, so to speak, that it would. We've had a number of yeasts.
From a fig tree in Brooklyn.
Not quite that romantic, but I mean, it's, you know, yeast captured during a hurricane. I guess it, you know, makes a good story, but not
could have been a fig tree in Brooklyn.
Not the best association, but this one is called Urban Funk. We captured this yeast. We did a beer with it and kept it in stainless steel. That's the urban aspect of it. It was also captured in an urban environment. And this beer is being offered at our sour release on April 19th. 650 bottles, that's it. And we hope to do others in the series. We hope to get yeast from a country setting, barrel age, that, you know, just sort of have fun with it. But it's using literally a, you know, very local ingredient to give it a, you know, kind of its unique characteristics.
Yeah,
and it's
nice.
What do you think of that,
Raphael?
And dry.
You had it before.
Yes, I had it before. Yeah. Yes, I like it very much.
But how does it feel for you? I mean, to be working with Phil in such a, like, interesting setting. He's making pilsners, he's making saisons, IPAs, but he's also making sour beers.
It's great. I actually was fortunate enough to be at the brewery when they were testing some of the wild yeast they captured. We got to taste a bunch of different ones, and they found which ones were viable. But it was I found it fascinating.
BR, you've traveled so much in Belgium yourself, and you work with great breweries like Cantillon. I mean, what can American brewers like Phil learn from Cantillon and the great Belgian sour producers?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how much Phil needs to learn with his beers, but I mean,
so they should learn from Phil.
I know, but I mean, in general, I find with a lot of American brewers, you know, who just want to kind of jump on the sour bandwagon, is they rush the beers. They're very one-dimensional. They're just sour. You know, there's just a lot of acidic notes going on, and there's not a complexity. You know, when you taste something that, I mean, Phil has done fantastic sours for a while, and you know, other brewers are doing it as well, but there's a complexity there. There's layers, and it's not just a simple one note, and I think you just can't rush it. You can't just say, oh, I want to put this out because it's very, you know, I'm going to make some money off of it. It's a thing to do. You know, I did my Imperial IPA, and now I'm going to do sours. They need time. They really, I mean, you know, the beers at Cantillon, for example, you know, it takes Jean several years before he's ready to release his beers. And it's not always depending on if you own your own brewery, if you've got partners who want to get things out into the market quickly, it can force people to rush things, unfortunately. But I do like that Urban Funk. That was very nice.
Thank you. And to what BR said and what your question was, Jim, in terms of what can we learn from the old world? And basically, it's what BR said, is that I think patience is something the old world knows, and Cantillon in particular. They also have a deep respect for the mystery of making beer, and they, superstitious is not a necessarily the best choice of word, but it's, there's a certain deep respect for the unattainable or unseeable parts of making beer, that there's things going on. It's a living product. It's evolving. And essentially, you know, the beer is the boss. You're not the boss. You don't set your calendar and say, okay, it's ready in 2 months. As I said before, it's ready when it's ready. And that's really the lesson we can take from the old world.
Raphael, what's this next beer we had? So this is a beer that I've seen. There's two styles of this beer?
Yeah, there's a white and a red version. This is with Gara Noir. It's actually half Gara Noir, half Pinot Noir. But it's only we can do it only once a year, this beer, because we work with a winemaker, and he's bringing me the pressed raisin, and I mix it during fermentation of a saison type ale. So I'm I So we do the fermentation together, and then it will be aged for maybe 4 to 6 months, and then bottle condition.
Paul, do you have a question? Because we've got two guys that make Saison, and I know you're such a great job with Ale Street News, and you've written so many homebrew recipes. What's a question that you would ask both these guys so they could answer separately?
Well, there's probably a lot, but I guess one question would be, what's your philosophy on spices? Because I know a lot of people these days are kind of adding a lot of things to saisons, peppercorns and so forth.
Yeah, a lot of peppercorns.
Yeah, and there's certain things seem to be very prevalent, but for instance, the Two Roads Saison doesn't have spices at all. This beer is not spicy.
I'm wondering
what your different philosophies are on
I have not much experience with spices. I don't use spices. I only do when I'm brewing a Belgian type wheat. I'm using coriander and orange peels, coriander for the spices. But in saison, I've never used spices.
And I don't say that spices are off limits. I think they have a place. They tend to be overdone. That's the biggest concern. People tend to overdo certain spices. Some are very powerful, and you know, that little goes a long way, so you have to be careful with that. I do, as Raphael mentioned, I like to get the complexity out of the yeast rather than add it by other means. But I, you know, I do make spice beers on occasion. It's not something that I'm philosophically against, but I think I read somewhere once a quote from an old Belgian brewer that if you could pick out the spice individually, then you're adding too much. So they really should blend into a, you know, have a synergy that maybe there's the sum of the parts is greater, and you can't really pick anything out. That's, you know, a little, it goes a long way. Go lightly on spices would be my advice, but you don't need them with the right yeast.
You have another question, Paul?
Yeah.
I bet you have about 20 questions. You know, I read your column every 2 months. Ale Street News comes out. Paul Sullivan, how long have you been writing the homebrew column?
I've been doing that since I was working at Commonwealth Brewery in New York. That was 97, I believe.
Yeah, it's a great column.
Thank you.
I'm happy to have you on.
Oh,
it's your first time on. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it never worked out before, but I'm very happy to be here also.
All right. One more question for the brewers, Paul.
How about the seasonal aspect of saisons? Different spices and ingredients for different seasons.
Well, I think that's true to the name. Of course, the name means season, and to vary things based on, you know, that's how
what's available, right?
People operated for millennia. You know, it's really recently that we've been able to pick and choose anything we want any time of year. There's very little seasonality left. And so this is a good way to keep it alive in the beer world. And it also shows, I think, resourcefulness and just, you know, an attention to that time of year. There's certain things available, and why not celebrate it and enjoy it while it's there and then move on to the next season.
Raphael?
Yes, I think... of course, you drink different beers in a different season. There are traditions. There are also what's happening now. But for example, myself, I like to drink an IPA all year long. And for example, for winter, I don't like personally much the beers, the Christmas beers with spices and things like that. I'm not so fan of that.
Just thought of another one, too. How about fermentation temperatures? That's always been a real interesting thing about saisons, something that Phil brought out in his book.
And the point I was trying to make is it's not necessarily important that you ferment really high in temperature, but famously DuPont ferments very high in temperature, and you don't need to be very high in temperature to get a lot of character out of that yeast. I think really their needs are more based on their system. They need to rush the beer out of fermentation, primary fermentation, into secondary. So they go, you know, at a a temperature a winemaker might use, basically just under the point where the yeast is going to die off from temperature, you know, high 80s, 90s Fahrenheit, and, you know, 32, 34 Celsius, you know, where you're getting really up there. It's really just to get the yeast through the system quickly. You can get plenty of character down in the more traditional range of 70 to 75 degrees. So it's a mixed bag. I mean, that's the thing about Saison and brewing them is that there's such leeway. You know, really, you can just do whatever your heart pleases. And that's the beauty of the style, and also what is frustrating to some people who like things neatly pigeonholed and defined. Saisons can be frustrating because there's such a wide variety and so many different approaches. But it's really, I think, that with the one style of beer that still shows the art of brewing, and that brewers have different approach. There's no rules. Whatever you want to do, that's the beauty of it for me.
What about Raphael? What about temperature?
Yes, it's funny. For example, in our region, the water we are using is pretty mineral. It's very, very pretty hard, and when we do a high temperature fermentation, it seems to ferment quick but stop quick. So it's for us, it's harder to get it dry, more than when we do it a little bit colder. It's funny, when I was reading Mark's book, and I mentioned that to a friend brewer in Canada, that some of the saison brewers, they go high in temperature and they don't use a big pitching rate. And he said, but this is for looking for trouble. So yes, I think each brew has his way to do things, regarding also of the kind of water which is available on site, and also the pitching rate and the aim of the beer. Sometimes I have had people telling me, I like your beer, but sometimes it's too dry. So. But personally, I like it dry, so it's up to the situation.
It's great. One last question. So, everyone in the room, let's offer up one of your favorite saisons. I'll tell you mine first. Fantôme. I love Fantôme. They're all different. I bet they're made with time and probably at proper temperatures, right? Have you had any of the Fantôme?
I have, yes. And each one is unpredictable. So that's part of the fun.
I love them. What about you, BR? What, pick a favorite. You have so many great beers in the Shelton Brothers portfolio.
I've got to go with one that's not one of mine. I wish it were. Is the Saison DuPont, which is what people think of, the classic Saison. I mean, yeah, it's a little bit higher in alcohol, but that's, you know, it's just got so many things going on with it. It's very dry. It's easy to drink, even at, what is it, like 7%.
And Phil, is there a Saison that inspires you?
Workers' Comp by Two Roads.
I like that. Thank you.
I gotta say
and Raphael.
I like the hoppy saison when they are pretty hoppy.
All right. Paul?
Yeah, I'd have to go with DuPont also. Maybe the seasonal at the end of the season, Avec Le Bon Vaux.
All right. Just well, I really like you guys coming on. Thank you so much. Raphael, we're looking forward to having you in New York. And where are you going to be? Is he visiting a few bars in New York City?
Yeah, he's just here quickly before heading out to Craft Brewers Conference in Denver. But tomorrow night, Wednesday, we'll be at Torst over in Greenpoint, a few things on draft, and some the new Foray Noir in bottles.
All right, and John, what is Two Roads doing this week? You got some special launch parties?
So actually tonight we have dueling events both at Alewife Queens and at the Pony Bar Hell's Kitchen. So come on out.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for coming on. This was a really great show. Thanks to our sponsors. GreatBrewers.com have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Phil, John, Paul, Raphael, and BR for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, who are in there in the booth. Maggie's tweeting at beer_sessions. And our engineer, who's back, the founding engineer and producer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.